Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Gary Barlett, the Postal Service's Office of the Inspector General's Chief Information Officer. Gary, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with some basics. You've been the CIO in the Office of the Inspector General at the Postal Service now for a few weeks now, maybe a few months. Where'd you work previously? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Actually, I just retired at the United States Air Force. I was a communications officer for 20 years. The last 6 years, I spent 4 years working on the staff of the Air Force Chief Information Officer. In the last 2 years of my assignment, the CIO office for the Air National Guard.
A lot different coming into the Postal Service than Air Force. How did you end up at the Postal Service?
The Postal Service has done a good job over the years of hiring vets. And I actually know several people that work here. The job was being posted. Several of my colleagues said, hey, Gary, there's this really cool place to work, and it's over here at the Office of the Inspector General. And I applied for the job off of USA Jobs, and I got hired.
So everyone wants to know, because USA Jobs has that awful reputation, how long did it actually take you?
So honestly, this is a great place to get hired into. From start to finish, it was really about 2.5 months all total.
Wow, I think that's actually really good news. I think people are going to want to hear that. So let's talk about your role as the CIO of the USPS's Office of the Inspector General. What do you do? What's your day-to-day activity?
Biggest thing is laying out the strategy for employing technology to support the mission of the Office of the Inspector General. And a big part of that mission is supporting a mobile workforce, primarily our auditors and investigators who are out in the field looking for efficiencies, things like fraud, waste, and abuse inside the Postal Service. It's all about helping the Postal Service. That's our mission. And my mission is to support those folks that are working hard to support that mission.
It sounds like you're more of a strategy guy than an operations guy, or do you have a little bit of both where you kind of get your hands dirty and you get to pull a wire once in a while?
So unfortunately, I don't get to do as much of that as I'd like to, and I probably do more than my guys would like me to. I've got two directorates that fall under me. One is IT operations, and they're the ones that you're kind of referring to from that aspect of running the day-to-day operations of the network, the help desk, the routers and switches, those kinds of things. And then I've got the application development directorate. So we've got some special things that we do from a coding perspective, writing applications, and really we're switching our focus more from in-house systems to developing mobile applications to support our auditors and investigators out in the field.
Right now, because you're new, do you spend more time in the operations side and less on the strategy? And do you hope to maybe turn that to more time on strategy and less on operations as you kind of get your feet wet and get situated?
So actually, I would say I'm just starting to turn the corner. As I walked in the door, it was important for me to really understand the kind of the ins and outs of the operations, really understand the day-to-day flow and what we have in place and the architectures and the technology that we have. And I spent about my first 2.5-3 months really getting to understand that. So I would say really starting about the first of the year here is when I turned the corner, really started focusing on strategy, long-term vision, and trying to lay out a roadmap for where we need to go.
So we're going to get to your priorities in a little bit, but from a roadmap perspective, am I hearing maybe an IT strategy being developed or maybe an updated IT strategy that's being developed in the coming months maybe?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I was working with some of the other executives here on staff to do just that. And we had an offsite right after I got here where I really got a sense for some of the strategic vision of where the organization wanted to go. Really started to formulate what I needed to do to support that strategic vision. We've got another small one-day offsite where I'm really going to start to lay that out for the organization. And we're really going to start to formalize that roadmap.
I think that's something that, you know, a lot of CIOs are doing, especially as we will talk later about cloud and mobility and things that are just changing the CIO's role. I had one person who's emailed me. They talk about, what about the information piece in the CIO's job? And I think that's where a lot of CIOs are going. And I know we'll talk about big data in part two of our interview with one of your colleagues, but let me go back for a second and talk a little bit about your office. How many federal employees do you have? How many contractors do you have? And what was your IT budget in 2012?
So all total, I've actually got a relatively small staff. We're a small percentage of the overall 1,130 plus or minus employees here. Budget's kind of an interesting conversation. The Office of the Inspector General has about a total of a $240 million budget. One of the things that I noticed here that I'm very appreciative of, so from a set budget perspective, I have a very small set budget. But as we lay out strategies for the organization, the leadership here is really good at ebbing and flowing money to the areas of need and not just doling out money to individual offices and saying, okay, here's your set budget for a year, and this is all the money you're going to get. We've got a really well-established investment review board here. In fact, we meet monthly, and in those monthly IRBs, as we refer to them, we really lay out and have a conversation about what are the best priorities to be spending money on. So from a budget perspective, I'd say it's a small budget as far as layout capital of taking care of the payroll and the basic paying the bills. But really, it's all about strategy. So it's not a set amount. It's really all about what are the priorities of the organization, and we spend money where it makes sense.
So in many ways, if there's a project that you can make the case for, the business case, and then the head of the OIG, the Inspector General, says, okay, that makes sense, let's invest, you have that ability to make that case. Very similar, sounds like, the private sector.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I really appreciate about this job. You know, I come from a background, you know, as I mentioned, in the military, where they pretty much set your budget. You pretty much knew almost down to the penny what your budget was going to look like every year. If you wanted to do a new project, you kind of had to figure out what weren't you going to spend money on to make up for the money you were going to spend on that new project, because each of the way the money was kind of carved out. But here it's a lot more flexible, a lot more dynamic as far as what makes sense, what's going to have a high return on investment. And if you can go walk in and make the case, then we'll find the money and we shuffle the money around to cover those expenses.
How does that change your thinking as the CIO? Because you're no longer saying, I know what I'm working on for the next 6 or 9 months, which we'll talk about in a little bit. You may say, I think I know what I'm working on, but that could change if all of a sudden this fancy new technology comes in and could change my world.
So two things. Number one, I think it's really all about setting a good pace as far as what you're trying to implement and being realistic about what you can implement. You know, you always hear the term about being bleeding edge. Obviously, we don't want to be bleeding edge here. So we try to take things, technologies that are mature. We have kind of a good model to follow as far as implementation. So a lot of times I kind of know how long it's going to take me to implement something, so it's easy for me to articulate that and kind of lay out that plan as far as my workload goes. But as far as dealing with the changes in technology, again, we go back to – we look at the strategy that we've laid out. If we need to make adjustments, then we circle back around. We make the case. And if we can make the case to make that adjustment, then we make that adjustment.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back and jump back right into some of your priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Gary Barlett, the Postal Service's Office of the Inspector General's Chief Information Officer.
Today, you ate Greek yogurt. You took the train. You wondered why people spend so much time reading celebrity blogs. You read a celebrity blog. You planned a workout. You skipped it. You did all the things that one normally does the day before a devastating earthquake shakes the community to the ground. You never know when the day before is the day before. Prepare for tomorrow at ready.gov/today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Gary Barlett, the Postal Service's Office of the Inspector General's Chief Information Officer. Now, Gary, before break, we're talking a lot about your background, about your office, the way it's set up, your role as the CIO. Let's jump into priorities. What are you hoping to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
As we've laid out kind of our strategic vision, I've kind of declared this, and it sounds a little cliche, but this is our year of mobility. About 2/3 of my customer base actually exist outside the National Capital Region area. We've got over 100 field offices where we've got auditors and investigators working out of, so a very highly mobile workforce. So my job is to figure out ways to support that highly mobile workforce. So I've laid out a strategy of focus on mobility, which is looking to take advantage of virtualization, bring your own device strategy, and then utilization of cloud services.
All right, so all the big buzzwords. So I don't know where to start with all your buzzwords. So let's start in the beginning, the virtualization. When you're talking about virtualization, we're talking about the back end of your infrastructure, I would imagine, correct?
So actually, I'm talking about both. So when I came on board, I was very happy to find that the agency had done a lot of hard work with virtualization in their server rooms. So right now, we've got over 400 servers that are all virtualized. So we've really tried to work hard on limiting our footprint from a physical server perspective. I now want to take that and extend it down to the client level. Right now, we currently procure about 1,000 laptops a year as we go through to support our workforce and do that tech refresh in the same cycle that everyone finds himself in and trying to keep up with technology. I'm trying to work hard to change that dynamic, move to a thin client environment, so I don't quite have to chase the technology of the box as much as providing the service to the customer.
So the thin client, were we talking about where you take any sort of, it could be a laptop, it could be a PC, and plug it into the wall and all your data, all your applications reside on those virtualized servers?
Absolutely. One of the challenges with dealing with a highly mobile workforce is you're never really 100% sure where they're going to be working from. So you combine that with concerns about where's that data, what happens when they lose a laptop. So looking at all those challenges and those concerns, looking at virtualization that allows them to access their data anywhere they're at, access it from whatever device they're on, I think is very highly supportive of a mobile workforce, and at the same time really takes into consideration some of the security concerns of that information that we're collecting.
Is there a challenge that you're facing to get to the thin client? Because it's interesting to hear a lot of CIOs I talk to are going back to the thin client concept, something that we saw a lot in the 90s and before. Is there a challenge now because you've been in this client-server setup for so long?
So a little bit of a challenge from a standpoint of changing the culture and changing the mindset. You know, so many people are used to the concept of this is my laptop, you know, this is what I carry with me, and this is where my information is. So from a culture perspective, a little bit of a challenge. I would say technology has evolved to the point where the technical challenges are nowhere as near as challenging as the cultural challenges that I'm facing.
One of the things about it is, when we'll get to mobile in a second, but when you have your laptop, for instance, and you save everything to your laptop, and then you maybe, when you get back to the office, you plug back in and you dump it into the data center. So would that still be the case, or would everything go through a VPN and a wireless or some kind of cellular technology where you just work back through 4G or 3G connection, you'd work back to the data center, wherever it is, based on that connection?
So it's funny you ask that, because I was asked that question as I was kind of laying this strategy out, and really my answer is it depends. And that's kind of a cop-out answer maybe at first, but let me explain. It all comes down to use case. Some users, it makes perfect sense for them to never have to worry about not being plugged in because of where they work or where they sit, so they're always plugged in. So they don't worry about that. Other users that are highly mobile, they'll tell you, hey, I'm always connected. I'm either in a coffee shop, I'm VPN'd in, I'm on my 4G connection, so it's not a problem. But then you've got users, as I said, we've got users scattered all across the United States, you know, and there's sometimes they're out in the middle of nowhere where they're not really connected. So we have to lay out use cases and then provide a solution that actually supports disconnected users as well as those users that are constantly connected.
So some people potentially could have a thin client setup, but really have a thick client too, kind of a little bit of a hybrid.
Yes. As a matter of fact, kind of what we're looking at doing, and we're just now starting to get into this, is a lot of the virtualization solutions now actually allow you to kind of check in, check out your desktop. So when you're disconnected, you can check out that desktop, work locally, create your own data, save that data locally, and then when you reconnect, you kind of check that desktop back in. Any changes you've made get converted back into the server room in the back end, and then if you just happen to be connected, that's what you're seeing, because all those changes are now uploaded, basically.
Now, is this something you guys are testing yet, or will there be a pilot, or is it already pretty well-established technology that's been around for a long time?
So the technology is fairly well-established. I'm always careful when I talk about technology being fairly well-established, because we know how often that comes back to confuse us a little bit. We're actually in a pilot phase right now, trying out a couple of different options, looking at what works, what doesn't, but we're looking probably within the next 6 months or so to really start pressing the test on that, trying to roll it out full scale.
From a pilot stage, how big is the pilot? Is it a few hundred, a few dozen?
Right now, our pilot is about 80 plus users right now, which is a small percentage of our total user base. But it's given us a really good feel for the different use cases and the different scenarios that we have to deal with.
All right, maybe something to follow up with you in 6 months once you kind of get through the pilot stage. Well, let's talk about the next one that's connected to the thin client, the mobile. Now, obviously, when you have a auditor or an investigator, they're out and about, they have probably used to carrying their 7 or 8 pound laptop with them. I'm sure if you said to them, here's a tablet or here's a do everything on your smartphone, they would probably say thank you very much. Is that where you're heading for mobile? And then also the app side, you mentioned your application development staff is focusing less on maybe the network type apps and more on the mobile apps.
A couple of parts answers to that question. So yes, absolutely want to look to support smartphones and tablets. And part of that is a bring your own device strategy. You know, so as we look, you know, organizationally and say, okay, what can we afford as far as handing out smart tablets and smartphones and all these types of things, and looking to give users a choice. A lot of users look and say, oh, it's great that you handed me this, but I still have my personal device. And yeah, carrying two devices, you know, is got a lot of challenges. You know, I've got two phones in my jacket pocket right now. One's for work, one's for my personal use. So looking to give people the flexibility of really choosing what they want to use and how they want to work. I'm used to coming from a military mindset. We're used to making decisions for everybody. Sometimes we're not so great at taking in input from our customers, but I've seen the fallacy of that. I've seen not taking into account what your customers really need and really trying to make adjustments to asking them and giving them the flexibility to work how they want to work, where they want to work, and when they want to work. So that's really what we're trying to focus on, is creating an environment where users can work the way that they want to work and what they find most effective, as opposed to trying to dictate it to them.
So the BYOD strategy, how far along are you with that? Because one of the biggest challenges I hear from CIOs time and again is, I think, twofold. It's security, because how do you ensure that, you know, the device that I have I bought is secure to connect to the network, but also the idea of payment or the idea of a stipend or the idea of some way, well, you want me to pay for my own data, you want me to pay for my own call-in minutes and use it for work. I'm losing money here somehow. So are you dealing, let's start with security first.
Right now we're looking at some of the big providers as far as mobile device management providers. Inherently that's their job is to provide that layer of security for you. You know, the ability to put a secure container or something on the device to where you've got a part of that device where you put your corporate information and that's your responsibility and control and it keeps it separate from the personal side of that device. As far as dealing with the users and some of their questions and concerns, it's very interesting. So as I've gone out and been in several meetings and we started to have this conversation, you hear the whole gamut, right? From one end of absolutely not, I've got my work phone, that's all I care about, and I'll never use anything else, all the way to the other end of you can't get here fast enough. Right now we're taking the approach of it's all voluntary. We're not forcing anybody to do this. We're not demanding that anybody do this. Really, it's about providing the user some flexibility and some choice. If a user wants to do it, that's great. Part of the conversation I get into as I talk to some of our users is it's surprising how many people are already using their personal devices for work. A lot of people make phone calls because it's easier. It's either the number they gave out, whether by just default, they just automatically rattle out their personal number, and suddenly that's the number that they're receiving phone calls on. They have this bad habit of forwarding emails back and forth and it's kind of blurring that line between which email they're using for which part of their life. So we're already dealing with that anyway. And I think if you give users the choice, I think a lot of users are going to start to see that, you know what, I'm already doing this anyway. I've kind of, quote unquote, already incurred this expense. So why not just make my life a little bit easier and focus a little bit more on doing the things that the way I want to do it as opposed to kind of blurring those lines like I've talked about.
Let me step back for security for a second. You talked about using a MDM device, creating a secure container. So, for instance, if I was one of your employees and I lost my device, you would be able to wipe the container clean, but my own personal information on the phone wouldn't be wiped clean. So if it was found, I would then be able to still have all my data on it. Is that the idea behind the secure container?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, some of those mobile device manager providers actually even provide a user interface, personal user interface. So let's say in that scenario where you say I lost my phone and you report it to the IT desk and we go, okay, there's a problem. We can go in and click a button and wipe the corporate data. But there's also a user interface sometimes where the user can go, hey, I don't think I'm going to find my phone. I don't want people to get my personal information, where they can actually remote wipe the personal side of their phone. Not up to me to do that, but some of those solutions that actually provide the ability to do both, but obviously my concern is the corporate data that I'm worried about.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about application development. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Gary Barlett, the Postal Service's Office of the Inspector General's Chief Information Officer.
This is a test to find out if you know it all when it comes to children. Name one of the leading killers of U.S. children age 1 to 13. What's the best way to protect children in a car crash? At what age and size should a child start using a booster seat?
Don't assume you know it all when it comes to car seats for your child. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat and know for sure. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Gary Barlett, the Postal Service's Office of the Inspector General's Chief Information Officer. Now, Gary, before break, we talked a lot about your priorities. One of them was mobile. We spent some time talking about moving to BYOD. One of the things you also talked about was the idea of a mobile applications and developing them, changing your application development group to focus more on mobile. That's a tough change moving from the typical, got to build it for the network, to have some build it for a tablet or a smartphone. How's that change happening? And then give me a sense of where you're going with those applications, because I imagine there's a lot of legacy in there too.
Yeah, well, there's definitely a lot of legacy. And as far as how's it going, not fast enough. We just hired our first true application developer as far as for a mobile application developer, and actually just are in what I would say the last testing stages of our first mobile app. We're just getting ready to work on pushing that app out. It was an application that was written specifically for investigators. I can't go into the specifics of what the app does, but it was targeted at a very special need the investigators had. So we went ahead and built an app, and so far the from the test group that we had using it, very positive feedback, and that's the kind of success that we're looking to build.
Is this an app? I know you can't go into the specifics, but for a smartphone, for a tablet, for either or?
So the app was actually built for either or. It's a fairly simple app, walk before you run. So we took kind of a simple approach, not very graphically user-intensive or anything like that. So right now it'll work on either.
From application development, obviously the legacy systems is tough. You have all these applications that people use every day. Are you trying to take some of those and move those into the mobile world? Or are you kind of putting a demarcation line saying everything from going forward is only going to be have a mobile component to it?
So really what we're doing is going forward, we're kind of the line that we've drawn is this. What's our core function in business as far as supporting our customers? Those are the things I want to focus the effort as far as application development goes, and all focused on mobile type applications. We're trying to reduce all of our what you would consider the traditional or back-end kind of application development we've been doing, and really look at providers to do a lot of these traditional, you know, if I was a small business, what types of things would I not want to try to do myself? You know, things like pay systems and leave systems and all these types of personnel systems that right now we kind of develop in-house. We're looking to migrate all of that out of in-house, looking to turn it over to third-party providers, most likely centered in a cloud environment, again, supporting that mobile workforce, and really try to focus on any code that we're writing is really more focused on this core mission set of the Office of the Inspector General.
You mentioned the magic word cloud. I think you're going to have a lot of people excited because you also talk about those back office systems and moving to the cloud. Let me start with the basics. Are you talking about private cloud? Are you talking about a public cloud? Are you talking about that hybrid government only but in the public cloud?
So realistically, it's going to be a hybrid. It'd be great to say, hey, we're just going to put everything in the public cloud and salute smartly and march on, as we often used to say in my old life. But the reality is it's most likely going to be a hybrid cloud. We've always got some things that we want to kind of keep a little closer to home. But again, as much as I can get out of developing that myself and really looking for, you know, vendor-provided solutions, that's really more what we're looking for.
And from a cloud perspective, are you also looking at some of the things you hear all the time, email, collaboration tools, or even, for instance, some of the mission-critical, are you looking to move those to the cloud as well?
I would love to say all of the above. The reality is we're starting to lay out a kind of a priority list of, hey, what makes the most sense to offload? We'll get some quick return on investment as far as, you know, recouping some of our workforce so that we can focus on some of these other challenges. At some point, there are some more mission-critical types of applications that I would love to migrate to the cloud, but we'll probably start with some of the traditional ones and work our way down the list from there.
But in many ways, you already are in the cloud because of the virtualization work. I mean, so much of the, you know, virtualization is part of that first step toward the cloud. I mean, I think I hear that often. Do you feel like you guys are prepared to go ahead and once you make the decision to say email, for instance, that's a pretty easy move? Or is there a lot of things that have to happen kind of first before you can say, okay, let's make that move?
If you're talking about email, I think there's probably a little bit of work that has to be done as far as laying that out. But for instance, we recently just stood up a new emergency notification system. As we got ready to look at solution sets, we went with the cloud provided service on that emergency notification system. So as we look at new services and new things that we're bringing on board, we're looking at it with a different light of, can we do cloud first on this particular solution set? And can it be an external cloud? Does it need to be an internal cloud? So those are kinds of new sets of questions that we're asking as we look at new solution sets, at the same time that we're looking at what do we already own that we can start to migrate into the cloud.
A lot of CIOs do worry about cloud security. Is that something, obviously security is something we all worry about. I mean, there's never a CIO who's going to tell you, no, don't worry about security. But is there any more concerns for you around security of the cloud than, for instance, if you said, well, I'm going to set it up in my own data center or I'm going to do some sort of client-server setup?
As you said, I mean, security is always an open-ended question as far as concerns about it. I would say things like FedRAMP and those types of things are really starting to change the way we look at security, you know, as far as the cloud providers go. And I think a lot of the different vendors out there are really starting to understand, you know, how do we draw that line between the way that we're used to doing it with a lot of our open consumers and the way that we do it with some of our federal customers. But at the end of the day, you know, I think that vendors out there can provide a level of security, maybe sometimes greater than what we can do ourselves, just because they've got more expertise in it, a little more stability in it, and quite honestly, they can pay their guys a little bit more than I can.
Very true. That's the biggest challenge when it comes to security is sometimes it's the people and how much the salaries of them. I mean, I think CIOs see that often. We talked a lot about mobile. We talked a little bit about cloud. We talked about, you know, the virtualization, the BYOD. One of the things that, that IG offices sometimes have that maybe other offices, traditional offices don't, is the need for specialized technology. You hear that sometimes with the scientific type of organizations. Are you as the CIO getting pressure or getting asked, maybe it's not even pressure, to give a certain type of app or a certain type of technology that the investigators need versus if you're a CIO in a non-IG office, maybe you wouldn't necessarily hear that request for?
Absolutely. So a lot of the things that our investigators do, you know, obviously revolve around a couple of things. You know, number one, just the sensitivity to the information they're dealing with. So going back to your, you know, earlier conversation, the earlier question about security. So they're obviously very concerned about, you know, it's case data. It's things that are going to end up potentially in front of a federal judge. So we've got to be very careful about that. And then also, a lot of our agents spend some time undercover. So, you know, that brings special needs and special requirements with it. And sometimes we've got to be very careful about the way that we enable them to do their job without kind of flagging that they're doing their job.
Was that a surprise for you? Did you experience that with the Air Force? I mean, did you come from a classified environment, or because you worked with the Air Force CIO for some time, you kind of maybe saw it all?
So I came from a classified environment and used to dealing with classified information, but did not deal with really on the law enforcement side as much. And I'll be honest with you, it was a little bit of a surprise when I looked at the level of activity that the investigators here do. You know, they talk about just like, you know, I hate to make the joke, but like you hear on TV, you know, informants and undercover work and all those types of things. So it was definitely an aspect of the job that has been quite a surprise for me and quite exciting for me.
Was there a learning curve in terms of understanding, okay, what do we need to do to get them the technology that they need? Or was the type of thing was technology is technology, and once you understood kind of the culture, the rest kind of can fall into place?
I'd say I'm still on the learning curve. For the most part, I think it's really understanding what their needs are. I've spent quite a bit of time now. In fact, I established some standing meetings with our computer crimes unit and the investigative tech support side. So I've got standing meetings with them now where I sit down on a monthly basis and really try to understand what it is they're looking for and what I need to do to support them.
Very nice. Now, we are almost out of time. Before I let you go, I know a lot of vendors listen to my show. Let me ask you, if a vendor comes and knock on your door, what do you like the relationship to be in terms of what do you want to – how do you like to interact with vendors?
So I'm very open to meeting with vendors. That was one of the things I got to do on the CIO staff for the Air Force, was meet with a lot of vendors. I find that's how I stay up with what's going on in the world. Get to look at it now from a slightly different perspective. So I'm certainly open to meeting with any vendor out there. Obviously, you know, I've got to work within my priorities and within the budgets that I've got. But if you're out there and you're listening, give me a call.
The one follow-up is, what should vendors know before they come knock on your door? Because the worst thing that I hear from CIOs is people going, hey, I have the perfect solution for you. And, well, what's my problem? You know, you have a solution to a problem that you understand. Where can they go either find out what your needs are, or what do you recommend?
So I would start with going to our public webpage and trying to get a feel for what our mission set is, and then put things within context. Like you said, it's always nice when we can have a conversation that's kind of founded on what my needs might be, as opposed to walking in the door saying, I want to sell you a pink umbrella when I'm not in the umbrella business.
Very good advice. No pink umbrellas. All right. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Gary Barlett, the Postal Service's Office of the Inspector General, Chief Information Officer. Gary, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Thanks for having me. It's great.
Tune in next week for part two of our interview with the USPS Office of the Inspector General when we talk with Brian Jones, the Office of the Inspector General's Director of Data Mining.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED. Your source for federal news now.